www.wfaenews.com. This is WFAE News.
Support for NPR comes from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. When, in April of this year, it was reported that an elderly couple had died in a hotel room in Boone, we were told that the cause was being investigated. That cause had yet to be revealed when, in June, an 11-year-old boy also died at the same hotel in the same room, and his mother was taken to a hospital in critical condition. That seemed to speed things up, and it was later announced that all three deaths were the result of carbon monoxide poisoning. That raised questions about how such a thing could happen not once but twice and why it took so long to discover the problem. It was also just another in a series of questions surrounding the North Carolina Medical Examiner's system. The Charlotte Observer began looking into that system in 2001 and concluded that the system for investigating deaths in the state was fraught with problems, failing to detect at least five homicides from 1993 to 1998. A follow-up article in the Observer last month concluded that although the problems with that system had been uncovered, they were not fixed. This hour, we explore those problems, the system, and more with two of the journalists who did much of the legwork on this story. Fred Clayson Kelly is an investigative reporter for the Charlotte Observer, where he has worked for 8 years covering government accountability and poverty issues, and is now writing a series of articles on the North Carolina Medical Examiner system. Welcome to the program.
Hey, glad to be here.
Nice to have you with us. Gavin Off is the data reporter for the Charlotte Observer. Prior to his arrival here, he was an analyst at the National Institute for Computer-Assisted Reporting, a nonprofit group focused on database journalism. He also worked as a data reporter in Washington at Scripps Howard News Service, and it's nice to have you with us too, Gavin.
Thank you. How are you?
I'm good. I'm going to talk about in a little while what a data reporter is, because I never knew there were such people as you.
We're out there.
I guess you are. Before we go back in time to earlier problems and investigations, let's just go back to June when the 11-year-old Rock Hill boy died in that Boone motel room, the same room that the elderly couple from Washington State died in April. The son of that couple, the couple from Washington State, was outraged that the room was being rented out while toxicology reports had yet to be issued. Why hadn't that report been issued? Because it doesn't take 2 months to do toxicology reports.
There's an explanation that the state has given, mm-hmm. and that is that the medical examiner, Dr. Brett Hall, who was assigned to investigate those deaths, did not put in an expedited order for the test. In other words, a rush order.
Mm-hmm.
So they had no idea that they needed to act urgently. That is their explanation. A longer, more complex explanation is that there are often long delays in getting toxicology reports in North Carolina.
Why?
Part of that is the number of cases, and part of that is a lack of funding.
Because according to your story, some experts say that it takes less than 15 minutes to complete toxicology reports for carbon monoxide poisoning, which is what this turned out to be. How many cases do they handle that they can't spend 15 minutes and get something out in a reasonable amount of time, even without that?
Yeah, in this particular Boone case, it's pretty obvious that the medical examiner did not have a good idea what caused these deaths. In fact, on the paperwork requesting the toxicology reports, he wrote OD ?? In those sorts of cases, the toxicology lab then has to run several tests. Mm-hmm. And in this case, they tested for several drugs, and they also tested for carbon monoxide poisoning. And so each test makes the process take longer because they do something called batching. So they have to wait till they get a certain number of cases of the same kind to test for that particular drug in a lot of cases. And so you often see delays. And in this particular case, you had the scenario where it was not an expedited matter. So it's not entirely clear that the toxicology lab knew there could be a public safety threat in Boone at that time. And so they were just following their normal processes. And in fact, two people died on April the 16th in this room. One of the tests was completed on June 1st, and another one was completed several days later from that same incident. So they were not in any hurry at all, it seemed.
Yeah. One of you wrote an article that appeared in yesterday's paper, a pretty extensive article about the situation in Boone and with the hotel ownership group, because they own a series of hotels. Mm-hmm. Up there, and one of the things that you pointed out in that article is that the health director, the health department, the public health director, walked into that room during the investigation, witnessed CPR being performed or trying to be performed on these two victims who had already passed away, and asked about air quality in the room. If she was smart enough to ask about air quality in the room, why didn't somebody determine the air quality in the room then and there?
That is a very, very, very good question. The answer we've been given by the authorities up there were just no obvious signs. And as you know, carbon dioxide.
Of course not. There wouldn't be obvious signs of an air quality problem, would there? Unless you walked in and fainted as a result
right.
of breathing.
Right. Well, in the case of carbon monoxide, there wouldn't be any obvious right. signs. It's colorless and odorless.
Right.
But if it was another form of gas, there could be a smell. People could be dizzy. People could have other symptoms that you can note when you walked in. And because doors had been open and windows had been open by the time the emergency workers arrived, a lot of the effects of carbon monoxide had dissipated.
Is it unusual for the hotel room in which these deaths occurred in April to have been rented out before the toxicology report or the cause of death had been determined? Is it unusual for that to happen?
Well, I think I talked to, I believe it was the attorney for the management group that is getting sued, and he had said that it was rented out once in between April 16th and June 8th. And that was rented out on June 1st, that same hotel room who their guests complained of no problems at the time. Mm-hmm. Other than that, they said the room was vacant the entire time.
Okay. In the case of the first two deaths, the couple in Washington State, you reported, Fred, that the medical examiner did not visit the hotel room. Given that autopsies were inconclusive and that we didn't discover the cause of the was carbon monoxide poisoning until the toxicology report came back in June, months later, was there really any reason for the examiner to visit the room? Is it normal for the medical examiner in a situation like this to visit the room?
The rules are different in different states. In North Carolina, there is no requirement for medical examiners to visit death scenes. They can choose to. But in states that have the leading death investigation systems, in other words, the best, medical examiners are required to go to the scene. It's considered a critical component of their investigation.
Is the medical examiner essentially the coroner in these situations?
Yeah, he's like the CSI guy who goes in and finds out.
Why wouldn't it be policy for the medical examiner to go to the scene of a suspicious death or an unknown cause? There's no gunshot involved, so there's a question about why these people died. Why wouldn't he go? Why wouldn't it be the rule?
Officially, the state would tell you the reason is it's not necessary in many cases. Unofficially, they would probably admit to you the real reason is money. These medical examiners are volunteers paid $100 per case, and being paid that little, they won't take the time to do that.
Gavin.
If I could jump in, looking at the data going back, I think I have around 5 years' worth of medical examiner data. They look at bodies at the scene of death around 9% of the time. So around 91% of the time, according to the information I have, and this is looking at around 100,000 cases or so, they do not go to the scene. They may look at the body either at the hospital, at the morgue, or some other place.
And from what you know, and you may not know the answer to this question because you can't, this is not your only area of expertise, but from what you understand about how this is done and why they do it this way in other states where the medical examiner is required to be there, how much are they missing by not being there?
A ton. They're missing a ton. In other states, a medical examiner would go in with a digital camera. They'd have a laptop computer. They take some sort of testing equipment. They would survey the scene to see if anything had been knocked over to tell you if there had been a struggle.
Aren't the police doing all that when they go in?
The medical examiner is supposed to conduct an independent investigation.
I see.
They can't be seen as being aligned with police and prosecution. Secondly, the police are looking for crimes. They're not trained to look for the cause of death in the same way that a medical examiner would be. For example, in a carbon monoxide case, the one thing we keep hearing is that the blood turns cherry red, so the body has a pink or a red hue. Mm-hmm. A police officer may or may not know that and may or may not be looking for that because they're looking for a potential killer.
You've said that medical examiners in North Carolina are not required to go to the scene, and perhaps I don't understand what I've read here from the North Carolina Office of the Chief Medical Examiner's website, but let me tell you what it says. It says that deaths by homicide, suicide, accident, trauma, disaster, violence, or unknown, unnatural, or suspicious circumstances must be reported to the medical examiner, and the body in those situations should not be removed from the scene of death until the medical examiner has authorized the removal. That sounds like they're supposed to be there.
It does, but what it really means in reality is the police calls the medical examiner and says, hey, we have a body. And the medical examiner simply says, well, ship it to the hospital or to the morgue. I'll look at it there.
And I'd like to add that most of these guys have full-time jobs. You know, most of them are medical doctors. They're nurses. So if they get a death around 3 in the afternoon, heck, they're probably at their full-time job.
Why is there only one?
Several counties have multiple medical examiners. I think the Watauga County had 4 or 5 medical examiners, now one less, now that Dr. Hall had resigned.
How many does Mecklenburg County have? Do we know?
I believe they have an office of 9. Don't hold me to that. But we have a little different setup in Mecklenburg County in that we have forensic pathologists who are the top of the line in terms of certification for doing this type of work. And we have paid professional people who go investigate death scenes and look at bodies.
So explain to me, if you know the answer, and you may not know the answer, how medical examiners can opt not to go to the scene of a death like this where the cause is unknown when it clearly says in the Office of the Medical Examiner's website that the body can't be removed until the medical examiner goes. How can they just waive that?
It says they authorize it, and they can authorize it simply with a phone call to say, move it. And that's often what happens. You have to remember in this system, a lot of times bodies aren't viewed at all.
So because there was a second death in this same hotel room due to the same cause 2 months after the first death, at which the medical examiner did not go and did not conduct the kind of tests that would be conducted probably had he gone, who's liable for the second death? Is it the hotel? Is it the people who installed the pool heater, evidently, that caused this carbon monoxide poisoning? Or is it the state of North Carolina and its lax medical examiner system?
It's a combination of all of them. There's accountability on all of their parts. I'm sure the local authorities in Boone, the police, the fire department, the health department would say that it sure would have been helpful to have those toxicology reports back sooner. In fact, I know they have been complaining to some reporters and sometimes privately. I'm also sure that the medical examiner would say that, or the state would say that they have failings on their part. For example, the fire department not having carbon monoxide alarms on their rigs and testing the room the day the two folks died in April.
Evidently, there's one truck in that area that has those alarms to test for.
Right. They've now bought them for the other trucks. As of last week, they have them on all their rigs.
In case you were wondering, we did ask the medical examiner's office in Watauga County to come onto the show, and we were told that no one was available to join us today, so we did want to give them a chance to talk about this. Fred Clayson Kelly is with us, and Gavin Off, two reporters for the Charlotte Observer who have been doing a lot of digging into the backgrounds of this case, and we'll continue our conversation in a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Donald Hack Diamonds, serving Charlotte for over 30 years with fine diamonds, engagement rings, custom design, and jewelry for all occasions. Donald Hack Diamonds, Sharon Road across from South Park Mall, and DonaldHack.com. Well, this summer, Charlotte played host to two different sci-fi or comic conventions, and this week, the biggie, Comic-Con takes place in San Diego. It's the biggest of them all. Now, these convention goers, the people who go to these things, are not just spectators. They dress up like their favorite characters. Perhaps you saw them roaming the streets of Charlotte in June. It was a sight to behold, I must tell you. Many of these participants will tell you that they are geeks. Their words, not mine. And psychologists now say that participating in these events may actually be therapeutic. We're going to peer into this culture tomorrow at 9.
Congregations distinguish themselves in the way they pray and the music they play. At this Pentecostal church, Holy Trombones.
When you're playing the horn, it's a revelation that you get from God.
A new series on sacred music in America.
When we are dead and gone, this music is going to continue on.
Starting today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered from 4 to 6:30 on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR News source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking to two reporters, investigative reporters for the Charlotte Observer, about the incidents in the Boone Hotel Room in which three people lost their lives in separate instances between April and June of this year due to carbon monoxide poisoning and some failures in the, I guess you could call them failures, in the medical examiner's office that didn't uncover the information in time to save the second person's life. Fred Clayson Kelly is a staff writer and investigator. Reporter for The Observer, and Gavin Off is a data reporter for The Observer. I want to correct something I just said. We did invite people from the medical examiner's office to be on the program, but not the Watauga County office, the actual state office of the medical examiner, and we were told that no one was available to join us. You reported, Fred, I think it was you who reported that experts in other states feel that it is critically important for medical examiners to view bodies at death scenes in possible carbon monoxide cases. So there was no suspicion at the time of the 11-year-old boy's death, he's the second death in the series, that there was carbon monoxide involved. When you're called, I guess there's no way to know in the heat of the moment that you're going to a scene of a death where a death occurred 2 months ago under similar circumstances.
When the 11-year-old boy died on June the 8th, there was some suspicion on the part of the local officials. The fire department there did do testing after he died. Mm-hmm. And so when the third person died, they were like, something is up.
Was the medical examiner's office up there involved in an autopsy, either of the couple or the 11-year-old?
Was the medical examiner involved? Yes. Dr. Brent Hall performed the autopsies and did the investigations in all three deaths.
Would the autopsy have uncovered the carbon monoxide in the blood? Or would that have come after? Would that have been sent to the main office, wherever that is in Raleigh, probably?
I mean, he performed autopsies and on the couple, and they were inconclusive. Hmm. And so he felt he needed the toxicology screen to make a proper determination on the cause of death. And so they needed the testing.
Now, you mentioned that these doctors that and nurses that are the medical examiners in these cases make about $100 per case. And the chief medical examiner's office says that they are a network of medical doctors and allied health professionals through North Carolina who voluntarily devote their time, energy, and medical expertise to see that deaths of a suspicious, unusual, or unnatural nature are adequately investigated. Why is this a volunteer effort?
And that is a very, very, very good question. You kind of have to go back to the 60s when this medical examiner system started. Way back when, in the early part of the 20th century, North Carolina had elected coroners who often didn't have any medical expertise do these death investigations. And there was a fear that they weren't doing a very good job, that Sometimes politics got involved in the decision on whether something was a homicide or not a homicide or a natural death. And so they said, let's go to let's try if we can get medical professionals to use their expertise to help us out. And so there's this idea that we're going to recruit all doctors to look at these bodies, and they'll do a better job than the coroners. But what happened is they never got enough doctors to volunteer to make the system really work. And it sort of was built for a more rural state, which North Carolina was in the 1960s, and doctors could take the time to do this. But as the state grew and doctors grew more busy, the investigation sort of fell off, and the system sort of fell into disrepair. There has been calls for professional investigators to go investigate death scenes and such. But money has remained an obstacle for a long time because, as many in the field will tell you, the dead don't have a very vocal constituency.
Wow. Does the state understand this, or is this coming to light as the result of your investigation? You're a data reporter, so your job is to compile all this stuff and then analyze it. Do people at the state level compile and analyze it to this degree?
Yeah, apparently they have a massive database. It's called the Medical Examiner's Information Systems, and essentially it's, from what I understand, though they have not fulfilled our request for it, it's around 470 tables or spreadsheets. Now, these tables or spreadsheets are all linked together using a unique identifier, mm-hmm. so you'll be able to see what pathologist did what toxicology reports, did what autopsy, did he go to the scene, did he view the body, where he viewed the body. We've gotten this data in partial. We're still waiting for our entire request to be fulfilled.
Is that unusual, or is that, or are they dragging their feet deliberately?
Shoot, I think the first time we asked for this data was February 2012. So a year and a half later, they've given us bits and pieces. We've asked for specific fields or specific columns of data, which they haven't turned over.
Is this difficult to compile? Does it take a lot of time and personnel to compile all this? Or is that their excuse, that they don't have the time to do it?
No. I'm sure from dealing with other data folks and other agencies, I don't see why exporting the data from one format to another should take that long. They did have some key folks retire recently, and I think that's their newest excuse. But back in February 2012, when apparently they had their full staff, we still didn't get all the information.
So this is a volunteer series of people that go out in each county of the state and perform the job of the mm-hmm. medical examiner. Who coordinates this? Who makes the call? When somebody's called to the scene of a death, mm-hmm. who calls the medical examiner, and who do they know who to call if there's more than one? How does it work?
Okay. Well, this is how the system works. Essentially, if there is an unexplained or sudden death that occurs anywhere in North Carolina, the typical emergency workers respond, whether it be paramedics, police, or firefighters. One of them is obligated to contact the local medical examiner. Mm-hmm. That person then has sort of control over the corpse and initiates their investigation.
But if there's more than one, if there's nine, I think you said there were nine in Mecklenburg County, for instance, how would you know who to call?
In many counties, they have it on a rotation, and so the local 911 or police officer will know who to contact on
a
certain day.
And if it's a volunteer effort, who coordinates their efforts and who reviews their work?
The person in charge over all death investigations in the state is the chief medical examiner, Dr. Deborah Radish. Mm-hmm. She has a team of forensic pathologists in Raleigh and her office who review cases. Cases are also reviewed by forensic pathologists around the state. Some are in Charlotte. Some are in Winston-Salem, Greenville. At ECU. And so cases are reviewed by forensic pathologists. Well, I shouldn't say forensic. Many of them are not forensic pathologists. They're just pathologists. The difference is important because a pathologist is basically trained in the study of disease, whereas a forensic pathologist, which North Carolina doesn't have enough of, mm-hmm. Is trained in the study of violent death. And many of the autopsies performed in North Carolina are actually performed by pathologists who don't have the highest rating or the highest training.
So they may not see the clues because they don't know what to look for in some cases. They're not trained in that area.
Exactly, and so we get mistakes.
You reported that in the past 10 years, and we've already talked about how infrequently these people go to the death scenes, but you reported that in the past 10 years in Watauga County, which is where Boone is located, medical examiners failed to view bodies at death scenes in 94% of the cases, which is slightly higher than the state average of 91%. Once again, it's a lack of funding, lack of regulation, lack of personnel. Is that what it is?
I assume it's a lack of regulation. From my understanding of the Boone deaths, the EMS folks called the hospital where Dr. Hall was at, and he requested the bodies be shipped to the hospital. Now, I would like to add that there's even more egregious cases around, I believe, and please don't hold me to it, but around 5% of the times the bodies aren't viewed at all. So they're not viewed at all, and in some of those cases there's not even an autopsy done. So at least he looked at the body.
Yeah. The Observer started looking into problems in the medical examiner's office in 2001 and found a series of problems dating back to the mid-90s or the early 90s. And as a result, a legislative study group looked into whether medical examiners had the training to properly investigate suspicious and violent deaths. But state officials ignored that group's recommendations. What did they recommend in 2001 and why were those recommendations ignored?
Well, they recommended improved and sustained training. They recommended the hiring of professional death investigators to go to scenes. They basically recommended sort of a regionalization of the system because right now the system's sort of overseen from Raleigh, and that doesn't necessarily produce the best supervision of the medical examiners. It's pretty hard for one chief medical examiner to know what all 500 of them are doing.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen instances where a local medical examiner, Gaston County, was hiring his own people without the state's knowledge and having them go do the death investigations, and that led to some embarrassing episodes for the state. And so those were the chief recommendations from that panel.
All of them ignored?
All of them were not ignored. Many of the minor or cheaper ones were implemented.
Mm-hmm.
The more expensive ones, like hiring professional people like in other states, really got no traction. I think one of the things when you look at this that becomes rather obvious is that there are some very good people doing this work in North Carolina, some very good forensic pathologists, but they feel like they have one hand tied behind their back because the system is so poorly funded. We were told that a really good death investigation system will spend between $2.50 and $4 per capita. North Carolina spends less than $1 per capita.
Hmm. You're a data reporter, Gavin.
Yes.
What exactly does that mean?
What I do is I request, clean, and analyze government databases to either find specific points of information, trends, or perhaps an entire story.
How did you stumble into this line of work? I've never heard of data reporter before.
Good question. I spent around 4 years down in Florida working at a community newspaper, and then went to graduate school at the University of Missouri, which houses IRE, which is the Investigative Reporters and Editors. It's a nonprofit. And also houses the National Institute for Computer Assisted Reporting. And that's all what these guys focus on is databases and analyzing databases.
Does every big city paper have a person like you on staff?
It's getting that way. Big city papers certainly have one. You get up to the Times and the LA Times, Chicago Tribune, they'll have a team of data reporters.
I mean, when you're not working on a story like this, what are you working on?
It could be anything from just helping out a city reporter or a sports reporter on some census information if they need me to grab it. I'll look at police data pretty much every week. I do a lot of maps for the paper, so I'll take a database and I'll be able to map the crime in Charlotte, or I'll be able to map some of the demographics in Charlotte.
So you not only know what to look for, you know where to look for it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think having that 4, 5, 6 years of beat reporting experience before getting into data really helped me out in that way.
Because you can speak the language and you know what the people writing the stories want to know. When are you brought into investigations like this one?
Well, I'm on the investigative team, so I work with Fred a lot. This one, I think we were talking about this story back in 2012 when Fred first introduced me to it. Mm-hmm. And at my time in D.C., I worked with the CDC's multiple cause of death file, which is essentially a death certificate for everyone in the U.S. And it dawned on me that I'm sure the medical examiner system has a database like this, and I'm sure it has a ton of information that would be helpful for the series.
There's such a thing as the Freedom of Information Act, which I believe applies only to the federal government. Yeah. Is there something similar in the state government, is that why they can take so long to get information?
We have the open records law, mm-hmm. but unfortunately for North Carolina and other states, there's no time period for when they have to get back to you. Some states might say they have to give you a response within 2 weeks, within 30 days, etc. I think when I worked in Oklahoma, it was, quote-unquote, a reasonable amount of time. North Carolina doesn't have that.
So often in the past several years, the Observer will do a series of investigations on whatever it may be, or the Raleigh News and Observer, which is your sister paper in Raleigh, will do a series of investigations, or perhaps you'll cooperate on these things, and you'll uncover things that people didn't know about in power, and they will react either as a result of discovering that information or because of the pressure applied by constituents who read that in the paper and want them to act on it. The information that you've uncovered at The Observer since 2001 and what you uncovered in the course of investigating this story, was the information you uncovered known by the state, by the medical examiner's office, by law enforcement, by people in the State House in Raleigh, or is this news to them?
It's not a secret. Yeah. I mean, definitely the state medical examiner's office knows what the best practices are. They know what they don't have. They know what the weaknesses of the system are. They live with them every day.
Yeah. I'm sure the folks on the field, the EMS folks and the fire department folks, I'm sure they know that the ME doesn't come to the scene mm-hmm. X amount of time.
And certainly it's an issue that garnered a lot of attention in 2001. And again, earlier this year, we've seen litigation involving the state with a family that a medical examiner didn't go to the scene, relied on police to identify bodies from a car wreck, and then subsequently sent the wrong corpses to three families for funeral services. So when one family got to the funeral home to sort of pay their respects and view the body, they opened the casket and they got a real surprise.
Yeah. Would the medical examiner have been any better at identifying an unknown body than the police?
It's his job.
Is it theirs?
it is their job, but it's not their legal job to make the legal identification on the body. Their work is the work is in the course of an investigation to determine the cause of a crash. The work of a medical examiner is to determine the cause of death, and they take control of the body. That's why it can't be moved until they say so.
Technically, theoretically.
Theoretically.
Yeah. From your investigation, and I think I already know the answer to this question from the things you've told me, but is the medical examiner's office the same? Is it run pretty much the same statewide, or does it vary wildly from county to county, jurisdiction to jurisdiction?
Well, you have to forgive me because I don't have the data right in front of me, but when you look at certain counties, they'll not go to the scene 94% of the time. Other counties, for one reason or another, it's something that I've yet to dig into, they'll go to the scene 50, 60, 70% of the time. And it goes throughout the entire list. Some do more autopsies than others. Some don't look at the bodies at all mm-hmm. more than others. So there is a wide variety.
It's Gavin Off, who is a data reporter for the Charlotte Observer. He and Fred Clayson Kelly worked on this story about the deaths in Boone because of carbon monoxide. We'll continue in a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Charlotte Restaurant Week. From July 19th through 28th, over 100 fine dining establishments will offer pre-fixed dinners of three courses or more. Menus and reservations at charlotterestaurantweek.com. Reaction and debate following the acquittal of George Zimmerman, accused in the death of an unarmed Florida teenager, is the topic of the conversation on the Diane Rehm Show in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock. And if you'd like to join our conversation, WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks will do the trick. We're coming right back.
The stories you want.
Imitation is the sincerest form of television.
The economy, and the economy.
The gloves came off.
This is not a victory.
Often, food aid gets there after everyone's dead.
When you want them.
Let me state this as directly as possible.
Listen all day, every day. NPR News, always on.
NPR News, plus local and regional news all day on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte NPR News Source.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're listening to another in our on-again, off-again series on why newspapers matter on today's program. You're welcome. Fred Clayson Kelly and Gavin Off are two reporters who have worked closely on an investigation that the Charlotte Observer has been doing into the deaths in Boone in the same hotel room of an elderly couple in April, followed by a young boy in June. All of carbon monoxide poisoning and the failings in the medical examiner's office, not just in Watauga County, but across the state. Although things are different, Fred, you wanted to say, in Mecklenburg County somewhat. Because I asked before the break, are the rules and the way these offices are run the same from county to county, or do they vary wildly?
I think what you'll hear from people in this area is that there are rural areas across North Carolina that are getting very poor service, and things are probably better in the urban areas, and in particular in Mecklenburg County, because the county supplements the funding from the state. And so Mecklenburg County is able to have paid people who go out and examine death scenes and view bodies. Mm-hmm. And so in Mecklenburg County, what you'll find is virtually all the bodies are viewed, as opposed to some of the neighboring counties that are more rural, where there'll be a high percentage of bodies that are not viewed.
Back in 2001, in the papers, and I don't know whether you were there in 2001 or not, but the paper did a series on the medical examiner's office back then. It reported it reported then that the medical examiners failed to detect at least five homicides from 1993 to 1998, including three in which they had to dig up the bodies to perform autopsies. And errors and oversights have jeopardized hundreds more death investigations in those years, 1993 to 1998. What has happened in the intervening years? Anything?
Not enough has happened is what you'll hear from forensic pathologists and others in the medical examiner system. They'll tell you that the state has not kept up with the leading states. They are afraid that the system is reaching a point where we're going to see a lot more tragedies like we've seen in Boone. Mm-hmm. And some of them will even say we may have already had those kinds of tragedies.
We just don't know. You mentioned that busy doctors rarely visit the scenes of suspicious deaths. Did that surprise you as a reporter, or did it shock you?
I started reporting on this in January of 2012, I got a call from a grieving mom who basically said, "You won't believe what happened to me." Her son died while she was away on her honeymoon, and she found his body in the garage hanging. The medical examiner wrote that he died of a suicide, and the mom didn't know about that ruling, but then she grew suspicious when she got the report back about his death. and it said a number of things about him having blonde hair and being X tall and weighing this much, and all of them were wrong. Later, they found out that the medical examiner never viewed the body, and they then had to dig up his body because she had feared that they had buried the wrong one.
Wow. Well, further, not only does the medical examiner evidently not come to the scene of the situation as often as they should, but you report that the state does not require specific training in death investigation for the people authorized to do those investigations. That's the definition of insanity, isn't it?
I found it quite shocking. When I have as many qualifications as they require, that's probably pretty scary.
Wasn't that one of the reasons that they went from this coroner system where you didn't have to have any qualifications and it was a political appointment to the system that we now have since the 1960s? Wasn't that one of the reasons to bring expertise into the equation?
That's exactly right. But the problem is they cannot get enough people to volunteer, and there is a fear on their part is that if they require training, that a lot fewer people will become medical examiners. The state says they don't have enough money to pay for folks to come to Raleigh for a week or 3 days, or enough money to require them to go somewhere else and get training. And so we have the system that we have.
Is it done elsewhere where they have decent systems?
In other places, they would say, look, if you want to be a medical examiner for us, you have to go to some national board or get some training for us that lasts a week or a couple of weeks. And then you have to recertify your training. In other words, you have to get an update periodically in order to continue to do this work.
Who does it well?
One of the examples often cited is a system in New Mexico, which is also a statewide system. Mm-hmm. There is a group called the National Association of Medical Examiners. They put out a list of their what they call their certified gold standard medical examiner systems. There's more than 100, nearly 200 on their list.
In New Mexico, where it's done well, evidently, mm-hmm. are these volunteers? Are they paid? Do they have to be trained? Do they show up at the scene every time? How does it work?
They have a little bit of a hybrid system. The biggest city in New Mexico is Albuquerque. And in Albuquerque, where most of the population is, you will have paid people who will go to the scenes with their cameras, with their laptops. They will take their pictures at the scene. They will write up the report often right from the scene. And this is shipped right back to their central office where a person who's a trained pathologist or forensic pathologist will look at the pictures, will look at the report, and have that information immediately, and then that person will make the decision because they have the expert training.
So with all of the failings that we have in mm-hmm. the medical examiner office, and I'm not pointing fingers, and by the way, I'll say once again, we invited the medical examiner's office to join us for this conversation, and they declined. With all the problems, in 2001, the Observer reported that some medical examiners, not only do they not go to the scene, some medical examiners seldom order autopsies when they should, and when autopsies are performed, the wrong doctors, meaning doctors from a specialty that wouldn't know what to look for, like an OBGYN doing an autopsy on a body that was carbon monoxide poisoning, the wrong doctors are often doing these autopsies. Is that still the case?
Well, I think around 4% of the time, they don't view the body at all, and they don't do an autopsy at all. So how exactly they can fill out their report is beyond me. That's something that we are looking into.
Hmm. As the result of the three deaths in what
Mike, yes. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I will say when in that series, I think they were saying that the wrong people would be pathologists trained in the
right.
study of natural disease and not violent death.
Okay.
And so we don't have enough forensic pathologists in North Carolina.
Here's a question. You said that they're paid $100 per case. They're busy professionals who have full-time jobs in the medical profession, either as doctors or nurses, and they volunteer to be the medical examiner or to be a medical examiner, for which they are paid $100 to go out and be on the case. Why would a doctor or a nurse even be interested in the $100?
I spoke to a doctor. She's actually a pretty popular doctor who asked that I not name her. She had moved to a different county, and she thought this would be a good service for her to perform. I believe she lasted around 6 months because she got no training. She wasn't in it for the pay, so that didn't necessarily matter, but she was also afraid of any of the liability, which would come with not viewing a body or not having the time to go to a scene.
As a result of these three deaths in Watauga County, Dr. Brent Hall, who was the medical examiner there, resigned, and the head of the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services said that these deaths should never have happened. So they are investigating. What do you think will be the upshot of all this?
Honestly, we have no earthly idea at this point. We keep calling the State Department of Health and Human Services and asking what their findings are, what they found, and we've gotten no word whatsoever. We keep hearing we don't have anything yet or nothing to say. It's really difficult to say because we're in a time of government cutbacks. There's been education's being cut across this state. A number of things are being cut. And so from what I can see, the fixes for that office would require an expenditure from the state at a much greater rate than we have now.
And Dr. Hall evidently has not chosen to talk to the newspaper for, I guess, obvious reasons. What is he liable for this, do you think? I mean, legally?
There is a court battle going on right now. There are four families that are suing the state over mistakes by medical examiners that range from sending families the wrong body to actually having a man's body sent to the morgue because they thought he was dead when he was actually alive. No one has successfully sued the state over a mistake by a medical examiner. Mm-hmm. That's never happened. The state's position is that they are state officials who have immunity from lawsuits and such.
If you think it's been bad so far, it gets worse. And this was in your story in the newspaper, that the deaths of the elderly couple from Washington State occurred in that hotel room in Boone in April. It took a long time for the toxicology report to come back to reveal that they died of carbon monoxide poisoning. And that report, as I understand it, came back on June the 1st. The young 11-year-old boy from Rock Hill who died on June the 8th. So that's a seven-day interval there. Did anybody tell the hotel, did anybody from the state tell the hotel that there was a problem with carbon monoxide in that room?
I do not think so.
Why not?
We haven't said whether they told the hotel or not, but they did say they tried to inform Dr. Brent Hall about the test results, and they say that it was his responsibility to contact fire, police, or local officials and sound the alarm about the hotel room. When we've talked to experts from other states, they said if that was in fact the case, that would be pretty unusual. And when they have a carbon monoxide case, they get on the horn from the state office or the county office and immediately warn police and fire basically to shut down that space and make sure no one goes there.
An email from Jay. Frontline PBS did a program, he says, on this. Please ask the reporters if they are familiar with this. The point of that program, some murders are missed because of a casual investigation will miss important clues at the death scene.
Yes, I am. We're very familiar with that. And that was an outstanding bit of work by Frontline. That's one of the fears. In 2001, this state put together a bill to form the study group for the medical examiner system. And if you look at the bill that passed, part of the rationale for the bill is they feared that up to 40% of the cause of death rulings nationally were incorrect. They feared that the situation might be similar in North Carolina. No one knows.
You spoke to Dr. John Butts, Fred. He oversaw death investigations for 23 years until his retirement from the Office of Chief Medical Examiner in 2010. He told you that he could not discipline medical examiners for flawed investigations because they are not state employees. They are appointees who make $100 per case. Couldn't he have removed them from those volunteer jobs?
Yes. Yes, in fact, he could have.
Did he?
He did not.
Why not?
Who would fill in for him?
there are different opinions.
Well, would it matter?
I mean, he has said that he didn't feel he was empowered to do that, but there are others who feel he did have that authority.
He wasn't, as the chief medical examiner, he wasn't empowered to remove volunteers?
There are people who felt that if he had taken that step, that a number of medical examiners would have quit, and that would leave the state in a real lurch. Now, he retired in 2010, and Dr. Radish took over. Mm-hmm. She has, in fact, rescinded the appointments of a few medical examiners for failing to follow investigative guidelines. Mm-hmm. She has upset some people and ruffled feathers by removing people from those volunteer positions.
And he went on to tell you, Dr. Butts went on to tell you that he couldn't demote or fine these volunteers for their shoddy work, but he still believes the system is effective. I'm not even sure what the question is here, aside from with him, or is he delusional, or does he see something that perhaps we don't know?
I think the system has some major, major flaws that if he was being completely honest, he would have to acknowledge. The system has major flaws, as I said. I don't want to say it's the worst in the country or anything like that, but it's certainly not at the top, and it certainly has things that need to be addressed.
You wrote that families, law enforcement, insurance companies, and researchers depend on medical examiners to find the cause of death in shootings, suicides, and other sudden or suspicious deaths. A good investigation can help solve crimes, determine insurance payouts, identify public health threats, and ensure nothing is overlooked in a suspicious death. Why, then, do we take this laissez-faire approach? This is a Republican now. It was Democrat when a lot of these misfailings were going on, but this is a pro-business state, and insurance companies don't want to pay out things they don't have to pay out. Why isn't that taken into account? Why this laissez-faire approach?
Because you can bury your mistakes. A lot of the mistakes are not uncovered. To do it right would cost money, and it isn't going to get you a lot of votes. I think that's a huge part of why it doesn't get a lot of attention. It's not a topic that the public